Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.
Summer is supposed to be an opportunity to slow down, but when you look at your kids, you can't help but notice that your kids are growing up fast. Help them build independence as they grow with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where parents can keep an eye on kids' money habits while kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. It's the easy, convenient way to raise financially smart kids. Get your first month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/pod.
You're listening to the Eye on the Illini podcast, hosted by Mike Kegley and Larry Smith. This week, the guys catch up with the greatest pass-catching duo in Illini football history, David Williams and Jack Trudeau.
Eye on the Illini. It's the podcast series brought to you by theIlliniGuys.com, the new and fastest-growing Illini info website out there. Illini Guy Larry with Illini Guy Mike. And Mike, we've got a couple of very special guests here tonight.
This is amazing for somebody who grew up a huge Illini fan. I happen to live in Mahomet, 10 miles, right outside of Champaign. And two of the guys that we literally, plunked down our money to go to the Illini games to watch when we were in high school, David Williams, Jack Trudeau, kind of the dynamic duo who led the Illini to a Rose Bowl in 1983. I don't know if, Larry, if it can get any better than this for Illini fans to be listening to two guys who have meant so much and put so many great experiences out there for Illini fans over the years.
Absolutely. We've had a lot of fun in this series talking with Kenny Battle, Bruce Douglas. David has come on before, Craig Swope. And so, Jack, it's great to have you on. Hello and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Awesome. Hey, I want to start because, we all have to admit, the four of us, that we are not as young as we used to be. So hard to believe, Jack, that we have a few Illini fans listening who actually may not have been around in the 80s. So I'd like to go back and maybe just tell us about the California connection and how you ended up playing at Illinois.
Well, David and I really got it going on his sophomore year, and just built on it every game. We worked more and more on getting him the ball, and he was a dynamic guy that could run with the ball when he caught it and was dynamic with the football when he had it. So we just got together that sophomore season and built on that and got more comfortable with each other all the time. I knew where he was going all the time. He knew what I was doing all the time, which is what you want to have with a receiver and a quarterback. You want to have that.
Right.
So we actually had a play called 98 days, believe it or not. I'd call Blue 98 days because I wanted Dave to get open. So I was telling him, get open. So that was how funny it got. So, he was just a very dynamic receiver and was very fun to throw it to. So
did Dave, when Jack was yelling out 98 Dave, did any of the other teams pick up on your code?
Well, yes and no. See, the thing was, when he called that, everybody was staying in block except me. So I had no pattern. I had no pattern. I could run wherever. It was max protection. You got nine guys in front of Jack blocking, and I could run wherever. So I would take off and run, and I'd look for a spot, and then I'd run to that spot, and he'd throw the ball. I'd run a corner. I'd run a post. I'd run all the way across the field. Or if everybody was deep, I'd run out, and then I'd just stop and hook, and he'd throw it. It was weird, but it was pretty cool.
that is cool. So they really didn't know what was coming.
No, because I didn't know what was coming either. I didn't know.
I was as blind to what was going on as everybody in the stadium, believe it or not. Except I learned what he did by his movement.
That's so great.
But like you line up and you call that play, and you look around and you go, okay, this the coverage. Where's the hole? who's cheating? Okay, I'm going to run way over there because now you know it's not a five-step drop. He has time, right? And I'm the only dude, so either I get open or he gets sacked.
Yeah, I don't admit to a lot of people that we had a play called 98 Dave. How tough is that? David, get open.
Right? Like I don't think we've ever told anybody that.
No, I don't think I have.
Breaking news.
And it's the funny thing is, it's not like David Williams was just some receiver. I mean, he's the best receiver in the country. So you're kind of telegraphing what you want to do, right?
Right.
Yeah, a little bit. But like you said, he could do whatever he wanted. So that was the key to it. And interestingly enough, in our great comeback game against Ohio State, which is probably the greatest game I've ever seen. Of course, I was in it, but I didn't throw the ball to David one time, which is amazing all by itself. The whole defense was stacked on him, so I had to go somewhere else. And that's what Mike White taught us as a quarterback. That's why we were successful all the time, because we knew where to go with the football most of the time.
Well, yes. I recall there going into the 83 season, you replace a legend, Tony Eason, in the first round pick. And so now it's your time. You're coming in. As you mentioned, as a sophomore coming out of California, at what point did you know that this team was special? You guys really had something really good.
Well, I think earlier than that, we played Wisconsin and had a pretty good game that I thought really defined who we were going to be. We made a lot of plays and beat a good Wisconsin team in Wisconsin. And that was a big game, I thought. That and got us going to where we all believed anyways at the start of the season that we were a good team. But, you know, you have to win those games to prove it. And Wisconsin was a great win for us. And then we beat a number of teams and we came to Ohio State. And that Ohio State game, when they got ahead of us at the end of the game, I never had any doubt that we were going to win that game. And I don't know what David thought, but it was pretty special times. I'd seen on film the corner come up and jam the receiver, and he'd miss a lot. He'd miss the guy that he's trying to jam. And on the start of that drive, Scott Golden's on the right, David's on the left. Scott Golden goes down the field. The guy comes up and tries to jam him, and I see it out of the corner of my eye and throw a pass to Scott Golden. I don't think I threw in practice once. So that was a good 20 yards, and then I ran the same play again, and David was on the left still. And the right side corner does the same thing, trying to cover the cover two. He's trying to come up and bump the receiver, and he misses. And so Golden's open again. So I hit him again, two plays in a row. And hadn't thrown the ball to David at all. We moved it down the field, and then eventually I audible to a toss to Thomas Rourke because the whole defense was on David on the other side. And Thomas ran around the corner. Jeriga made a great block, and in the end zone he went. So that was a great victory for us.
That was the loudest I think I've ever heard. And being there for a long time, I don't know that I've ever felt Memorial Stadium any louder or shake any more than that individual play.
No question. That was crazy.
That drive was incredible. And then Jack failed to mention on one of those plays, he had to scramble about 20 yards. He got hit to go out of bounds. So he made two quality throws. He made a great run. And then the touchdown play, he changed the play to that run for us to go in. So he had to read and see what Ohio State was trying to do to us to audible to that run. That was incredible.
What they were trying to do, David, was take you away. That's what they're trying to do. So okay,
Right. See, that's what a quarterback sees, right? I'm just trying to figure out how to get open.
Yeah.
And guys, one thing, I don't know if Jack hit this, but for the first four or five games, we had no idea we could play like that, right? We lost the first game to Missouri. If we played Missouri any other time other than that first game, we'd have smashed them. But
yeah, no question.
That was Jack's first start. I don't even think I started. And you still kind of wondering, okay, am I good enough to play? I mentioned this in the other one. Oh, am I good enough to be at this level and play? And after the game was over, I think I had six catches, about 80 yards. I was like, okay, I think I'm good enough to be on the field, right? But I didn't know, right? I didn't know. And then I didn't know we were picked to take like ninth. So yeah, nobody, anybody tell you they saw this team coming is lying. Jack didn't play. I didn't play. Brooks played a little bit. Swoof played a lot. But yeah, like Archie Carter and Vince Osby, those guys only played sparingly. So we just lined up and we believed in one another and just said, okay, let's just go. And exactly. And then stuff just start happening. And then when this dude got comfortable, then it was a whole different ball game. Because if your quarterback and your leader's not comfortable, nothing's going to happen. Nothing. So,
Jack, what was it like, Jack, when you had to take over for Tony Eason? You know, that I had put up all sorts of stats, and now you're the guy who has to take over. How did you win over the team, and how did you go about, you know, doing that? Because, you know, like David said, you guys hadn't played that, you know, so it was like, that was a big deal. How did you transition from Tony Eason to Jack Trudeau, and how did you make that work?
What was interesting was that Tony and I were roommates. He was a California junior college guy. I was a California high school guy, but we lived together, and I got to see him and the pressure that he was under and that type of thing and what it takes to be a quarterback. Right away, Tony said, you've got to understand, you control the team. You got 51% of the franchise. So take it and run with it when you get the chance. And so I didn't feel the pressure that some guys do. I know the guy that was behind me, Bennett, he didn't think he could handle the pressure. But to me, it was just a matter of not letting the pressure get to me and just taking the job and taking 51%, controlling the team and going. And it was that simple. And I worked. I did the same things that I'd always done. I wanted to know what the defense did. I wanted to know what we did well. And Mike was the kind of coach that I loved playing for, because he said, you know, you do whatever you think, whatever you want to do. They had another way. They just point at me and I'd call the play. So Mike had a lot of confidence in me because of, you know, I'd been there for a couple of years, and I think it carried over to the start of that season. We started playing. I think I became the leader of the team quickly because guys believed in the quarterbacks. Mike didn't believe in beating us up and downgrading us and yelling at us and that kind of thing. In fact, a couple coaches like to yell at me, and Mike would say, stop, you know, don't be yelling at him, you know, so that it was an easy transition for me from Tony. And, you know, I love the offense we had. That's why I went to Illinois in the first place. And thank God I had guys like David to throw it to. So it was a lot of fun.
You know, you speak about throwing the ball to David. When did it occur to you that you're throwing the ball to a guy who is like staking his claim to being the best that there's ever been at that point in time in college football at his position?
It didn't take long. I mean, I would say probably halfway through the first game against Missouri, I knew David was a guy that in my group of receivers, David was the most capable of doing the things that I needed to have done. David made every great catch you can imagine. And that's what I loved about him. He always made the tough catch and made it look easy. And that's what made him great. And the fact that he could get open whenever he wanted to, I love that, because I could just call 98 Dave and I knew he was going to get open. And I just had to figure out where he's going.
You guys are giving me too much credit though. Uh-huh. Now I'm a sophomore, Jack's a sophomore. So, you know, we just had Oliver and Kirby and Tony and Mike Martin. So they didn't see me and Jack coming. And he doesn't get the credit that he deserves for my success, right? We practiced a lot and we was together a lot, but he made me who I was. I could catch and I could run, I was tough. But learning the game and playing with him and them teaching me what Mike did, what we ran so many plays over and over and over, I start learning what Jack was looking at, what he was seeing, right? So from at practice every day and practicing and watching and looking at film, then you drop back and you go, okay, 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, okay, he got to throw the ball now. Right. So I would look at the film and I'd see his drop, and then I'd see where I was on the film, and I go, okay, if the play is supposed to be over there. And if he's not open, he has to throw the ball. So I made sure with that little clock in my head, I'm going to be open if this guy isn't open. So I bet you 45% of the plays that I got catches on, they weren't to me. But I knew when Jack set up to do his reads, if his reads wasn't where they were supposed to be, he was firing it to me because I was going to find me a hole to get in and be ready. Right? So
you did that.
You just said my career, but this dude made my career. So you figure 3,000 yards, however, 3,300 yards, I bet you 3,200 he threw. Right? Yeah. So when you can't mention me or see a film clip of me without seeing Jack.
It's true.
So anytime you ever see a film clip of me, Jack threw the ball. And the trust I had for him was wherever he threw it, I would run in there and get it. It didn't matter. I never looked. Yeah. I never doubted him. I just ran and ran and ran. And if I had to jump, I would jump. If I had to get on the ground, I'd get whatever he threw. I was going to get it because I had that trust in him. And he would throw it because he knew I would do all my – give it my all to make sure I would come down with that ball or not let anybody get it.
Now, David.
Well said,
David. David, I want to ask you one question, though, to follow up. I heard a rumor that at least part of your success was due to Steve Pierce drawing defenders away from you, allowing you to be wide open because of the coverage. And that was the rumor I heard. But because of the coverage that was expended on him, you were open. Is that true?
Zero.
Zero
credibility.
I'm going to tell Steve to stop starting that rumor.
You tell Steve that because my first year it was me and Cam and Donnie and Scott Golden and Mitchell Brookins. My sophomore year was me and Randy Grant and David Boatwright. My senior year was me and Jack.
That's about right. And Thomas in the backfield, who I love to audible runs to.
Hey, here's a fun fact. I also owe some of our success to Jack because when we were in 82 in rookie camp, Jack threw a ball. I ran an in round. Jack threw a ball low, and I separated my shoulder trying to go catch it.
Hmm.
Right. Jack put me in the hospital 5 minutes after we met.
Who's boss?
David,
You know, it's really not a coincidence that we are talking to the all-time leading passer and the all-time leading receiver in Illinois history, and you two were side by side together. So when you guys talk about that, I mean, it makes sense. And I think that, you know, for those of us who watch that and still have vivid memories as if it was just, you know, last month or a year ago, to remember how special you two were working together and how special the two of you made this program.
It was a lot of fun. Those days were amazing. And people don't always remember, but the times that we played at Memorial Stadium, the fans were going nuts and we were walking 5 feet off the ground, fired up, ready to play the game. It was an amazing time at Illinois, and I loved it. I loved playing there, but I'm telling you, it's like nothing that they've seen in the last 10 years. You know, it's just not. So.
Yeah.
I love that dude. Jack, I love that dude. So yep. I would have ran through a wall for that dude. So it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Whatever he did, whatever he called, we was going. And we bought into him. We bought into the system, and we trusted one another. I mentioned to this Jack before, but I think I only can remember Jack missed me one time. I probably ran a few wrong routes before, but I only remember him missing me one time in 3 years. And I think he was shocked, and that's why he missed me.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. That's why you caught so many balls, David. Because I didn't miss you.
Right. You didn't miss – No, but you never did. It was like, okay, we call this play. Go make it happen.
Right.
And
that was my attitude. That was your attitude. That was Mo Bias's attitude. That was Craig Swope's attitude. We all had the same attitude. Go do it. Get it done. Go play and do what you're supposed to do. And that's why that team is so good. We had a bunch of guys that believed in themselves, believed in our team, and it carried over to every game. We played great defense, great offense, and we were capable of doing whatever we needed to do. But it was a fun time in Illinois. I'm telling you, it was such a good time. And I don't know that we spent a lot of time in the before the first game throwing the ball to each other and seeing everything that he did, but we gradually got into it more and more as the season went on, to where he was running the routes and in practice I was watching what he was doing, and I got to where I could tell what he was doing on every play, you know. And I could think of some of the catches he made against Purdue our senior year, against Army in the Peach Bowl. David made a couple catches that I'm telling you are astronomical, that I can't even believe he made them today. I threw the ball and I threw it high, which I didn't like doing, but I had to throw it high to him down the middle of the field. And I knew he could jump and he had long arms and he'd jump up and catch it. It was amazing. So, you know, it took time to get to where you could do that. You know, you throw it up and you want your receiver to go get it. And David would always run and get it. And that's what I loved about him. He was not a guy that was going to sit on his heels and wait for someone else to make the play. He was going to make the play himself.
Hey, you guys are so good excited. Stuff. Yeah, it's so exciting to watch. And, man, it's fun to hear you guys just talk about this. You know, we've had David on before, and that 83 season, you win the Big Ten, you get to Pasadena right. for the Rose Bowl. And we've heard on previous podcasts from David and from Swope about what went right, even what went wrong before and during that game. So, Jack, what's your recollection of that game going back out to California, the Rose Bowl, and then boom?
It's a nightmare for me. It's something that I will never, ever feel good about. I'll never feel good that we didn't get back to the Rose Bowl. There's two things. So I remember walking on the field and I thought we were going to tear them up. And the first play of the game, I think I rolled out to my left and I tried to plant and I slipped and I tried to throw it to Dave and it was underthrown and he couldn't make the play. And it was just one thing after another. Then they started blitzing me and I threw it like 25 times in a row, and we had a bunch of guys drop balls, which never happened. Randy Grant, my high school receiver, who caught everything I threw to him, he dropped like four balls. David, I think, might have dropped one, but
I dropped a couple too.
The way the game went for me was just, it was trouble the whole way. I just can't believe that we ended the season playing that badly against a team that I think we should have beat, to be honest with you. David, I don't know what you think, but we didn't have our best stuff that day. And the amazing part, we had great practices before that. And there's a lot of people that ask me, I get asked the question all the time, did you guys really go to the Playboy Mansion? And I always say, yes, of course, but we didn't go the night before the game. That's for sure.
Right.
But the game did not turn out the way we wanted. And for us, it was kind of a return to maybe to what Illinois used to be. I don't know. It didn't feel right. Things didn't go the way we wanted to. Like I said, I slipped and underthrew David on the first play that should have been a touchdown. And, you know, just one thing after another. We dropped a bunch of balls that we never did. And, you know, I just don't know what – I don't know why we played the way we did. They came after us with some blitzes, and they did a good job of getting after us. But we still – if we do what we should have been doing, what we had done all year, I think we still beat them. But, you know, it's one of those things that you – for me, I try not to think about it too much, but it was a nightmare for me.
I think we only played one other game that bad in our 3 years. That was a game our senior year in Iowa. But other than that, was that Rose Bowl game. That was the worst we played out of all.
Can I tell a joke about the Iowa game? Our senior year when we were up in Iowa. And we got our butts kicked. I mean, it was 49-0 before I touched the ball, I think two times. And I was a captain, and we go out at halftime for the flip. And Chris White is the other captain. If you know Chris is a funny guy. And the official comes up and says, Illinois, you deferred. Would you like – and he's going to do the flip. And Chris says, we'd like to get on the airplane and go home, which at the time I thought was very funny. But –
that is hilarious.
You know Chris.
That's
know
how
Chris.
We play. That's how we play, too.
Right.
Take the coin flip home.
Yeah, we wanted to go home.
We did not play.
No, we did not play that day. We didn't play the game against UCLA. We didn't play that game against Iowa for sure. And other than that, David, I think you're right. I don't know if we had any other games that stunk like those two.
No, not like that. Because all the other games, any game we lost, we were in it and we fought until the clock ran out. We never, ever gave up. We never, ever gave up, ever. And we played like we still got a chance. When we walked on, when he walked on the field and got in that huddle, you knew we had a chance. And I was on the field with him, like, we got a chance. Just get us the ball back one more time.
You know, and if you take a look at it, here we've moved along, you know, 30 years later. You see this prolific passing game that we still have. And yet when you look at the record books, you know, Jack, there you are at 8,725 yards. Yeah, are you surprised that despite all these changes in the game, you're still the number one guy in school history?
I'm a little surprised, actually. I thought there's been a couple times where I thought I was going to get passed, but you know, it's pretty amazing, really, because the game's become a passing game more so than even when we played, and I'm surprised that Illinois hasn't been able to find a guy that could throw it. And the kid that's there now is pretty good. I played against him in high school football, but he's a pretty solid player. But I don't know what's going to happen with him. But
yeah, but you know what? Too, they don't compare. It's like not apples and apples anymore. Like we play.
No, it's not.
Stanford and Missouri. We play Nebraska and USC. They play Western Illinois, Captain Crunch University. They play four bums every year, and then you add in Rutgers and Maryland. Like they play seven teams that you should put up 50 points on everybody. And then play 12 games. They don't play Ohio State, Michigan half of the time. So they miss three good teams every year. Can you imagine if we play our schedule and we play four bums, we didn't play Michigan, Ohio State, and Iowa.
We would have gone back to the Rose Bowl.
Every year, but also Jack would have threw for 15,000 yards. I'd have broke every receiving record in the history of mankind. You playing four guys that don't even know how to play.
Exactly.
I went on the field about 3 years ago. I took one of my kid about 4 years ago. We went to a game, and the offensive lineman was all under like 6 feet.
Are you kidding?
We playing them. It's incredible. It's incredible. The schedule. The cupcakes that we play, and we lose to the damn cupcakes. That's what pisses me off more than anything.
Yeah,
we're not supposed to lose to University of Texas at San Antonio. We're not supposed to lose to Rutgers. We're not supposed to lose to hell. We never lost to Wisconsin, Michigan State. We were smashing all of them. So when they look at the schedule, we look at the schedule and go, okay, where's Iowa? Where's Ohio State? Where's Michigan? Nobody else was important. We was beating them because we was walking on the field, go beat them on general principle, right? Jack in the huddle, we beating them.
When I walked in,
go ahead, Jack.
When I came to Illinois, I had an alumni. I was at a basketball game, sitting in the front row, Illinois seats, you know. And the guy sitting next to me was some alumni, and I don't know who it was. And he leaned over and he said, if you guys can beat Ohio State and Michigan in the same year, you got something. So that year in 83, when we beat Ohio State and Michigan, I was like, we got something, boys.
Yeah. Yeah. And for Illini fans, I remember because that 83 season was my junior year in high school. And I was thinking between you guys and between the basketball team, I thought, well, geez, you know, the rest of my life, Illinois is going to be in the top 20 in both sports. This is going to be great. And then the 90s happened. And I remember when walking out of a basketball game, when Bill Self was coach that third year. And I told my dad, I said, you know, we got to remember this because you don't know how long it's going to be here. And I'm really hoping that hopefully with two good coaches, maybe we get back to the way you guys had it in the 80s and we can start saying the 20s belong to the Illini. just like you guys made the 80s belong to the Illini, kind of a true statement.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, totally
did. Fun times. Yeah.
So after you get done, you know, you go in the second round of the NFL draft.
Right.
And what is that like to transition to the number one guy in school history? And now you're going to an NFL locker room where you're the rookie. And how did you make that transition?
Well, it really isn't that difficult, but you know, again, pressure is something you can't let get to you. And I don't like when guys say there's too much pressure on them, but the truth is when you go to the NFL, you have a lot of pressure on you to win immediately and do things that, you know, you probably shouldn't be trying to do. But, you know, I was forced to play right away and it was a tough season. I'll admit that it was a tough season, but it was fun. And I didn't have David. That was the other thing. I didn't have a receiver that I knew could do the things I wanted him to do. And I had some good guys, but it was a tough, tough change. In the NFL, when you throw a pass and it's a little bit behind the guy, it gets intercepted. Or if it's a little bit out in front of him, it gets intercepted. So there's a big difference. The game's a lot faster, and it takes some getting used to. But, you know, I think the confidence I had as a quarterback was because of David, because of the offense that we ran, which was, you know, you're the quarterback. You have 51% of the franchise. Do whatever you think is right and make us win. And so any play that Mike White called, I had no problem changing it to running something I wanted to run. And I'm not saying I was always right, but I had a pretty good idea what I wanted to do when I after watching film for a week. And so I felt like the Illinois days prepared me to be a quarterback, prepared me how to prepare, how to watch film, how to study guys, how to study defenses. And that just carried over from college to the NFL. It's the same thing. And thank goodness for the offense we ran, things we did. Made my life in the NFL much better.
I was going to say, yep. It really makes a difference. Jack, you end up spending 10 years in the NFL. I mean, that's a nice long career. What would you, looking back now, what would you change about it, the years with the Colts and a couple other teams?
Well, the thing is, when I was in Illinois, I never got hurt. And I get to the NFL, and I blow out a thumb, I blow out a knee, I hurt my other knee. I've got injury after injury. And if you take the 10 years, I spent probably 6 years of that on injured reserve. It's crazy because, you know, I played well when I had a chance to play, but I didn't get to have the long-term success that you need in the NFL. So it was a kind of a mixed bag. But injuries, I would definitely want to get rid of the injuries and the concussions and those kind of things. I had 11 concussions in 10 years at the Colts. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a lot. And you're right. I mean, you can't replace, you know, your health of the field. I mean, it's a physical, brutal game. And it's just that those are the intangibles that you can't control.
Well, in those days it was really brutal because the quarterback was open season. They'd hit you and, I have a picture of against Cleveland Browns where I get sacked and I can't even see my head. My helmet's off but my head, I'm underneath this guy and you know, it's like, where's my head? You know, and I got a concussion on that play, but it was just crazy. So that's probably the biggest thing I wish I could do over again was not have all the injuries that I had. And I, you know, you don't know why you have injuries, but you know, my legs, I blow out my left knee in the last in Japan in my senior year at Illinois. But then I go to Illinois and I blow out my left knee again and my right knee and I blow out my thumb on my throwing hand. I break my left pinky finger that caused me a lot of pain. I had an injury where it ripped off the fingernails on my fingers and made it hard for me to throw. So it was one thing after another in the NFL from an injury standpoint for me.
And then, you know, you were in there and obviously you had to battle through those injuries. Then was it like when you retired and then you transitioned to being for the first time in, you know, decades, a quote, normal human being? What was it like when you had to begin your life away from the game of football, away from these big stadiums and cheering fans and everything that goes along with being the star quarterback that you've been for so long? How did you adapt there?
Well, it's a tough transition, let me tell you, because I didn't make enough money that I could sit back and do nothing. I had to try and work, try and get a job that I could, you know, get excited about and get up every morning and go to. You know, I had been playing football for the last 20 years or whatever it was, and I didn't really have many, I didn't get many opportunities that I liked the job that I was doing. You know, I always had to go in there and try to sell somebody and something, and, you know, and the bottom line is it was a long transition for me. And I did it through, I coached baseball, I coached football, kids. I enjoyed doing that stuff. And I did radio, I did some of that. So those things helped me transition, but it was always a tough transition because I never, my excitement level of getting up and going to work wasn't the same as it was in the NFL or even at Illinois. So it was a tough transition, and you make it, but it doesn't always go smoothly. There's bumps in the road, so.
Yep.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's one of those things that, because let's face it, you know, being an NFL quarterback is really cool.
It is. It is really cool. It is really cool. I have to admit to that. I actually had a girlfriend tell me that she dates guys that are, you know, a Yale and Harvard guys that are orthopedic surgeons and have these great jobs, and they're always concerned about the fact she dated me. I'm like, okay. They're always afraid I'm going to come back and steal it from them, I guess. I don't know. But
David probably has the same problem.
It's a lot of fun being a quarterback in the NFL, that's for sure.
Sure. And I would think every job after that is like, okay, this isn't fun. I don't know what job you could get from there that would
okay, guys.
Out of excitement.
Guys, I'm starting to feel left out here. We've got a former NFL quarterback. We've got a former NFL wide receiver, and we've got a former CNN anchor and a sales guy. So this is this conversation is getting ugly.
We have stories. There's no question.
Yeah, I played football at Muhammad Seymour. Woo!
Well, I know that's that can be a tough transition for so many athletes. And over the years, I've talked with so many guys that, you know, my goodness. I mean, we could write a book about that. Jack, I know that you've had some health issues more recently. Can you kind of tell us what's going on or what happened?
Yeah, well, I was watching my dog at my daughter's house, and I woke up one morning and I had a headache and I couldn't think straight. I couldn't get my phone to work. I couldn't do anything and couldn't get on the computer and be able to surf or do the things that I usually do. And I tried to drive home, and I was – Carmel, Indiana is known for roundabouts. And roundabouts, traffic comes at you from the left all the time. And it's not easy to know who's got the right of way. And I had the stroke, and I'm trying to drive home. And I realized I had the stroke when I started pulling out in front of cars in the roundabout. And I got on the interstate, and I couldn't stay in my lane, and it was strange. So – you know, I end up going to the hospital and they check me out and I've had a stroke, and you know, it paralyzes my left arm a little bit, my left leg. I've worked through those pretty good. I'm not walking with a cane anymore. I'm walking. That's where I was when I was a little late with you guys. I was out for a walk. I'm sorry, but I try to walk whenever I can and get a vigor, some exercise in. So, you know, I'm trying to do some of those kind of things. I've lost a little eyesight in my left eye, which is kind of hard for me because I've always had great eyes. And so that's been a challenge from having the ability to drive again and that kind of stuff. But I'm fighting through all that. I'm trying to get better. I'm working on it. I'm doing everything they tell me to do. And that's just the attitude I've always had about life and everything else. When you have a bad situation, you just do the best you can, you fight through it, and you try to get better, and that's what I'm doing. So I'm battling the stroke situation. I had a couple little ones after that, but the first one was major, and it like I said, it made my left arm. I have a hard time doing stuff. And my left leg, I was walking with a cane because I couldn't walk without it. And now I'm without it. I'm doing well. I'm getting better, but it takes time. And there's a lot of expense, a lot of things that you have to do that come at you fast. And, you know, you have to figure out a way to get it done. I have to have care on a daily basis. 4 to 8 hours a day. I have someone here with me because I can't drive myself. I can't put my shoes on. I can't do a lot of things. I have a hard time with buttons because my left hand doesn't work. You know, it's a challenge to get through life when you've been used to being, you know, 100%, and then stroke hits you, and now you've got fortunately didn't have any language problems, didn't have any of that kind of stuff. My eyes didn't droop or anything, so I'm very fortunate, but it was also a very scary time.
You know, and not to cut you off, I'm sorry, Jack, but I think that I was going to add, I think that would be a tough thing to go through for any of us. But I think when you are a world-class athlete like yourself, like David, the people in your close circle, where you have had extraordinary athletic or extraordinary physical ability your whole life, right, to then have that right taken away, I think would be even more catastrophic than if it were happened to me or to Mike or someone else who maybe didn't have those kind of physical gifts.
You know, that's true. But the good thing about it is that I also have the athletic mind. You know, I don't believe anything's going to stay the way it is. I'm not going to let anything bring me down. I'm going to fight through it. I'm going to work through it. I'm going to work at it. I'm going to get better at it. And that's the way I've always treated things in my life. If things don't work, I'll fix them. I'll make it better. And that's what I've been doing. I've been, you know, walking and, you know, trying not to fall down. You know, weebles wobble and they fall down. That's what happens after a stroke. But, It's been interesting, and like I said, I'm walking without a cane now, and you wouldn't even hardly know that I've had a stroke. But you know, I have to be careful and got to watch what I eat and all that kind of stuff. So it's definitely a challenge, and it's a lifelong thing that I've got to deal with. And again, I don't let things bring me down. I look at the bright side of things, and I think that's what helped me in my NFL and in Illinois days, is I've always been a positive thinker that didn't ever think the negative was going to happen. So
Jack, when did the first major stroke happen?
It was in January 22nd. I had the first stroke, and then I had another one, like a couple weeks later. And then I had another one in May. And since then I've really tried to cut the food that I eat, cut the sodium out of the food I eat, and really watch what I'm doing and be more careful. And, you know, and like I said, I had lost the movement of my arm, my left arm, my leg. I've got swelling in my leg and my arm right now that I'm wearing compression socks. And, you know, I have a hard time with my left arm. It doesn't move very well, but I'm getting through it. You know, I'm working through it, and I'm battling it. I'm not giving up. And that's the fight that David had. And I had the same fight. I don't ever give up. That's not the way I believe life should go. So, you know, I'm trying to stay positive and see the best things in life and keep going. So that's how I believe life's supposed to go. So
yeah. And that attitude that you learn from athletics, you know, we had a coach who before every game would tell us always think in terms of winning. And he would start right off, he would say that just very low voice. He'd repeat it like four times, each time louder. And then in the end, he would literally scream and never, ever give up. And as a right kid, we knew it was coming. And we appreciated it. We roared and ran out to the field and played hard. But as an adult, right, as an adult, I've learned that little speech, always think in terms of winning, you say it four times and never, ever give up. I've gotten more from that little thing from my football coach than almost any other human being in my life. because it applies.
Yeah, I believe that.
So often.
I believe that. Those are great lines. And again, that's my philosophy. That was David's philosophy. Never give up, never stop, never think we're going to lose. We're always going to win. We're going to find a way to get it done. Like we did against Ohio State, 82 yards in what, 40 seconds or whatever it was. And find a way to get it done, you know, find a way to make it happen. And it was that simple. We were not going to be on the wrong side of the scoreboard. We were always going to get more points than the other guys. We're going to find a way to win, or we were going to die trying. That's just the way it was.
Yeah, and one of the things that we wanted, you know, all of our listeners to realize is obviously the medical emergencies and medical bills are the number one source of bankruptcies in this country.
Right.
And so there is a GoFundMe page. If you that will support Jack Trudeau, IlliniGuys.com has nothing to do with this. This goes to Jack and his family to help fight the battle of paying the bills that come along with these type of events. And so if you go to the front of IlliniGuys.com, there is a Trudeau number 10 button that's on there. Please click on that button. That will take you directly to the GoFundMe page. And if you want to make a donation there, that would be fantastic. We would love to see that. But we want people to be clear. All this is going to Jack. The purpose of this is to make sure that when these bills mount up, and it really doesn't matter in what you do, the bills mount up for health challenges like this. Whether you are somebody who is a bricklayer, whether you're a professor, whether you're an ex-NFL quarterback, these things happen. If folks want to go out there and support that, we would say, please come to our website. You can click on that Trudeau number 10 link and make a donation to help out. All those donations will be appreciated, because nobody wins any of these battles by themselves. So we just wanted to put that out there for everybody.
Thank you. Thank you for thinking of me. And if you can help, I would greatly appreciate it. All the money's going towards my medical bills. My son's a CPA. He manages it, and he's doing a good job with it. So we're going to do this the right way and get through it. So I appreciate the help, gentlemen.
Oh, yeah. We appreciate you coming out and sharing some of these Illini memories and with our fans here across the Illini Guys radio network, along with anybody listening to our Eye on the Illini podcast. We know that there are quite a few Illini fans across this country who, you know, can go back to the times of the 80s and a smile comes on their face because of what you guys did to help maybe take people's mind off of other things in their life, to make those Saturdays moments that we all cherish, even though it's 30 plus years ago. So thank you very much. And let me also say something that's the truth. You know, David Williams has been extremely influential in trying to make sure that we were aware of this issue and make sure that it doesn't fall out of people's awareness, because there's a lot going on in everybody's life. People get busy with their everyday tasks. But yet when somebody is struggling from a medical challenge like this, as the event gets further and further away, that doesn't mean that the struggle gets smaller. It means that the struggle is still there every day as you get up every morning and have to go through physical therapy. And so, David, thank you so much for helping make us aware so that we could do our best to help out Jack and make sure that there's opportunity here to for all of us to maybe acknowledge some of the memories of the past and hope we can make the future a little bit better each day for you in terms of helping you, face the challenge of some of these bills, et cetera.
Well, I can tell you, David is a great friend and I love him to death, and I appreciate everything he does for me and you guys as well. And all the Illini fans, I'm telling you, thank you. And I appreciate it. So I think about Illinois all the time. I've been to a lot of games, but I always think back to that Ohio State game. It's the one that just, you know, is a never-ending memory for me. So,
well, Jack, I certainly second what Mike said that, you know, as the older we get, the closer in age we are in terms of similar life experiences, but certainly growing up in Mattoon and watching you play and watching David, and as I said at the top, you know, really becoming friends with David as an adult is right. A real treat. And this doesn't stop here. We're certainly going to do what we can to help you now. And well, guys, we will leave it there, but what a treat for everyone listening to this, as Mike mentioned, either on the radio show throughout the state of Illinois or on the radio podcast or the Eye on the Illini podcast. Jack, it's been a real treat. David, always good to talk with you. And let's do this again soon. We'd love to keep up with you and your progress. Let us know how things are going. And once again, everyone, good. Definitely go to that IlliniGuys.com, click on the Trudeau 10 button, and please donate. Give to this treasure of Illini Nation and make sure that we can do all we can to help them out. Well, guys, thanks so much. David and Jack, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Sorry it's late.
Thank you guys for having me. Yeah. No. Keep your ass on time.
You know, Mike White rules 15 minutes early.
Right? And I was 15 minutes late.
I didn't realize where I was walking. I didn't realize I wasn't here at 8 o'clock. So.
Yeah. No, you guys are all good. Well, listen, be sure to check out IlliniGuys.com. Free 7-day trial when you sign up. We've got a lot of stuff happening. Again, on all the different platforms. Hey, for Jack Trudeau, David Williams, and Mike Cagley, I'm Larry Smith. All the best to you. Have a blessed evening. And go Illini. We'll see you next time.
Go Illini. Yeah, I agree. Go Illini.
This has been a production of LMBC Sports LLC and JM Talent Productions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
From kids' sleep gummies all the way to extra-strength sleep gummies, Ollie can help everyone sleep like it's a school night. Do wellness on your terms. Find Ollie at a store near you or at OLLY.com.
Ollie!
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
High Five Casino lets you play your favorite slot and live table games, like blackjack, with the chance to redeem for real cash prizes. High Five Casino has a giant selection of over 1,200 games, including hundreds of exclusive games only found on High Five Casino. It's always free to play, and free coins are given out every 4 hours. Ready to have your own High Five moment? Visit HighFiveCasino.com. That's high, the number 5, casino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
Summer is supposed to be an opportunity to slow down. But when you look at your kids, you can't help but notice that your kids are growing up fast. Help them build independence as they grow with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where parents can keep an eye on kids' money habits while kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. It's the easy, convenient way to raise financially smart kids. Get your first month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.